The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a brand new week, a brand new month. Unfortunately, same old shit, different day. And it's getting worse. You know, I need to back up here a second, because let's go back a year, right? A year, just to toss out a date. A year ago, I was expressing my dissatisfaction with the idea of Joe Biden being the nominee. And the reason was, one, I thought he would lose. I was wrong on that one. But two, I didn't think he was up to the task. And God, I hate to say it, but that's what's playing out. Joe Biden is on the global stage this week, right? Right now, he's in Glasgow, Scotland for the COP26 climate talks. But he went there without having the assurances from Congress that the United States will be able to do what Joe Biden has promised. And the reason for that is that that Congress has not yet passed the two infrastructure bills. And again, I pause before I say that because they don't have an easy to roll off the tongue name. We still stupidly call them the BIF, which stood for Bipartisan Infrastructure Framework. It's not a framework anymore. It's actually a bill that's already been passed by the Senate, still waiting in the House to pass it for good reason, because it's supposed to go hand in hand with the other, what started out as a much larger package, which is now not too much larger, but that's the human infrastructure bill, or the Build Back Better bill, or whatever the fuck they're calling it. This is one problem: messaging. And I've said this so many times, the Democrats have a communication problem.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Yeah, failure to communicate. So did you hear the latest? Joe Manchin had a bit of a press conference this afternoon because Joe Biden's over there saying, we're so close. They were originally over the weekend talking about, we've got a deal. We're going to have a vote on Tuesday. And then we heard reports that, wait a minute, not on Tuesday, because they're still negotiating some things. They're still negotiating, I think, parental leave. Bernie is still pushing to get his Medicare expansion in. There are still some issues being talked about. So the bill has not been finalized. We get that part. It's not finalized. This, and we're talking about the human infrastructure bill, or the Build Back Better Act, or whatever the hell they're calling it today. So the news services that I read this morning, and while putting together my What's News segment, were somewhat confusing, because on the one hand, it's like, well, they're going to have a deal to vote on Tuesday, and then all they're attributing it to is House Democratic leadership, who put out a statement that said, quote, we have made extensive progress on prescription drugs and other key initiatives which were not included in the text posted to rules on Thursday. At this point, we'll need additional time to craft language and get final agreement with all parties involved. Therefore, the Rules Committee will not be meeting tomorrow, meaning today, on the updated Build Back Better Act text. More updates to come. We still intend to vote as early as possible this week, meaning this week, right? That was put out late last night. So there's that. But the other part of the bill that they didn't mention is the fact that the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, hasn't yet scored the bill. Well, they can't, because it's not finalized yet. They're not done writing it yet. If they're not done writing it yet, they can't expect to vote on it this week. So they keep setting themselves up for failure because they're putting out these random deadlines that mean nothing. You know what the real deadline is? December 3rd. Two things happen on December 3rd. One, that's when the newly extended transportation funding runs out. They extended it last week because the so-called BIF, or the hard infrastructure bill, will take over for that and will provide the funding for transportation once that's passed. So when it ran out, they extended it once, then they extended it again. The new deadline, it runs out December 3rd. Also on December 3rd, well, that's around the date that the United States is expected to hit the debt ceiling. And that's got to be raised. It's also, remember when they, Congress extended I don't even know what it was. Time to pass a budget because we were going to run out of money, right? There was supposed to be a shutdown. Well, they voted to extend to do a short-term funding deal to get us through so that they could have a new funding bill. Well, that also is up December 3rd. December 3rd is the witching hour. Why? They're all of a sudden say, well, it's got to be done this week. You know what? They missed their other artificial deadline to have it done before Joe Biden left the country. And maybe, just maybe, if they had stayed in Washington in August and September instead of taking how many weeks? 6 out of 8 on vacation? They could have gotten it done. But no, they don't understand, to coin a phrase, the fierce urgency of now. So they blew through that. They keep setting up these fake deadlines. And here we are. So again, so in the meantime, Joe Biden is somewhat embarrassed on the global stage because he doesn't have anything concrete to bring with him to this COP26 conference. He can say, well, I plan to lower half our emissions by 2030. But he doesn't have the legislation to back him up yet. So that happened, right? Then also, the polls are just horrendous. I try not to pay too much attention to them because we know what polls are. They're snapshots in time, and we know how accurate they are or aren't. They're FUBAR. So I try not to pay too much attention to them. But when they're overwhelmingly saying the same thing, there's cause for concern. We had a con man, liar, thief, cheater, sexual predator. I mean, every horrible thing you can think of to describe a person we had in one Donald Trump for 4 years in the White House. Granted, his polling numbers, I don't think, ever got above the low that Joe Biden's at now. But the media doesn't seem to care because they're reporting on it like the sky is falling. And then again, maybe it is. This new NBC, is it an NBC News Marist poll? Is really, really, really bad. I thought I copied it here, but I don't see it right now. But it's not looking good at all. And today is Election Eve. Tomorrow is the first Tuesday in November, or the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, which is Election Day. Now, this is an off year, right? It's not a presidential year. It's not a congressional year. Congressional years are midterms. This is an off year. But there are a lot of consequential elections happening tomorrow. Governor's race in Virginia, which, of course, we know, and it's not looking very good, and it should be a slam dunk for the Democrats. There's the New York gubernatorial race. I'm sorry. No, it's not. It's the there's Virginia, and there's, oh, shoot, what's the other governor's race? New Jersey. Sorry, New Jersey. I played for you the swearing commercial. Then there are a bunch of mayoral races. New York City, Boston, Atlanta, Minneapolis, Seattle, and Buffalo. All mayoral races, all happening tomorrow. I get that sometimes people just, you know, if there's not a presidential election on the ballot, they don't vote. Stop that. Vote. It's your civic duty. And if you don't vote, you have no right to complain when Republicans kill what's left of this democracy, because that is what's happening. So let's go back a second to to the infrastructure package, right? That we so sorely need, desperately need. We are so far behind the rest of the world. You know, they have high-speed rail. The rest of the world has nice things. And we here in the United States, we're the ghetto. Seriously, it's like they built the highways and the rails and whatever once. And they're like, okay, we're done. Move on. And they never looked back. So our roads and bridges are crumbling. Our water supplies are contaminated. Infrastructure in every state is hurting because we don't take care of things. We don't take care of our people. We don't take care of our infrastructure. We don't take care of anything. So here we are. And now this administration and this Democratic Party, which, yes, came back into power, but with the slimmest possible majority ever. Seriously, no majority in the Senate. Kamala Harris, the vice president, gets to cast any tiebreaker vote as president of the Senate because it's 50-50. And in the House, Nancy Pelosi has three votes to spare. Three! I don't recall it ever being this tight. And it shouldn't have been. It should have been a slam dunk, again, for the Democrats after the 4 years we had of Trump, after everything we learned about those Republicans. And this is where we are. And now this new poll, I'm not even going to quote it for you because it's just so depressing. But basically it said that 71% of Americans think we're on the wrong track. Lovely. And that a majority in this poll alone, don't take it as I'm saying this is the way it's going. For this moment, when they took this poll, the people polled said that they would be happier with a Republican-led Congress. Are you fucking kidding me? These are the people who are, you know, Donald Trump lies and they swear to it. These are the people who the night of January 6th said, holy shit, we just had an insurrection. Our lives were at risk. And then a week later said, oh, it was a day. It was a tourist day on Capitol Hill. Because all they care about is power. There's so much hanging in the balance here. And this is where I go into my old, I'm glad I'm old. But I'm not that old. So I plan to be around probably for another 15, 20 years. So, you know, and if I weren't so selfish, I'd be thinking of the young people. And frankly, I do. I have a 22-year-old daughter. And I hate that this is the world. This is the country we're leaving to her. Now, I know they can clean it up, but we got to get rid of these geriatric patients who are running the Democratic Party and get some new blood in there so they can get something done. And the first one who needs to get the boot is Joe fucking Manchin. So let's go back to where I started today, right? Where they were going to have a vote tomorrow on both bills. They're so confident it's all going to get passed. And then, oh, wait a minute, we're still negotiating a couple of things. So Joe Manchin holds a bit of a press conference. And Joe Manchin says, I'm not even going to paraphrase for you. I'm going to play it so you can hear his own words. It rendered me speechless. You ready? Okay.
Again, to be clear, I will not support the reconciliation legislation without knowing how the bill will impact our debt and our economy and our country. And we won't know that until we work through the text. For the sake of our country, I am urging all of my colleagues in the House to vote and pass the bipartisan infrastructure bill. It's bipartisan. 69 votes. We worked on that for many, many months.
Oh, my God. They're not there anymore, by the way.
It's not going to work to get my support of what you want. It's what we should all agree on and work through the process. I'm open to supporting a final bill that helps move our country forward.
Bullshit.
But I'm equally open to voting against a bill that hurts our country.
Bullshit.
And I've been very clear about that also. And most importantly, hurts every American.
You're hurting every American.
And I mean that. Let's all work together.
Oh, my God. Listen to yourself. You obstructionist piece of shit.
It makes us better and leads the world.
Okay, Joe Manchin, I got a song for you. God. I would have played the Shut the Fuck Up song, but this is more straightforward. Fuck you, Joe Manchin. He is so fucking full of shit. It's like he dangles a carrot and then he pulls it away. This is an ad that ran in West Virginia. I don't know who produced it. I believe it might be a Republican group. But check this out. So this, again, is an ad that I found fascinating, so I pulled it to run it for you. The man speaking is not only a Republican, he's a Trump supporter. And listen to what he's saying here.
My name is Gary Walton. I live in Payton City, West Virginia. I'm a Republican, and I support President Trump.
Oh, God.
I worked for years as an oil drilling technician, but when COVID hit, I got laid off. Now I'm working again, but longer hours, making three quarters of what I was earning. The kids come home to an empty house because my wife and I need to keep working. This is why I support this American Jobs and Family Plan. It would mean really good paying infrastructure jobs. I could afford to send my son to college, and it helps cover costs for our younger kids. This is what Washington should have done a long time ago.
Yeah.
I want to thank Senator Manchin for working hard to get this done. Please pass this plan. Don't cut it. For West Virginians and everybody in America, it's time to pass this Jobs and Family Plan.
The Jobs and Family Plan? I guess that's another name for it. Well, it's not going to happen, at least not now, because of your guy, Joe Manchin. It's absolutely sickening. And to put the cherry on top, the media is going to blame the progressives. Oh, the progressives won't vote for this bill. Oh, please. Oh, please. I've had enough. I'm at my breaking point. Again, I've said it a million times. It's the Democratic Party excels at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. And here they go again. Why can't we have somebody competent in any of these jobs? So, you know, I'm here in Florida. Okay, so I'm in Florida. We have, I will say, we are the shithole of this country today. We have a governor who I lovingly refer to as moron death sentence, who is doing just that. The things that he does are so reprehensible, and they don't stop. Here's one. He appointed a guy to be Surgeon General. We already know that moron death sentence is anti-mask. He'd prefer to spend over $2,000 per person multiple times because they need multiple treatments of this the monoclonal antibody treatment once you get sick with COVID in order to treat it, where, you know, a couple of doses of the vaccine could prevent it, or at least prevent you from getting seriously ill. But he opts for the more expensive, the treatment after the fact, rather than the prevention before the fact. So he appoints a guy as Surgeon General who echoes his stupidity. His name is Joseph Latipo. And check out this story. And there's a reason I'm telling you this story right now. Surgeon General was at the Florida State Senate because, you know, he's got to be confirmed, I believe. He's in the job, but I don't think he's been confirmed yet. And he went to meet with one of the state senators, a woman named Tina Pulsky. And when he got there, they asked him to put on a mask, and he refused. What he didn't know at the time, and what hadn't been made public at the time, is that State Senator Tina Pulsky is being treated for cancer. She is undergoing chemotherapy, and she hadn't gone public with her diagnosis yet. She was trying to keep it quiet and work through it. Well, let me read you. I'm going to read from a letter to the editor. It's with Miami Herald. It said, hard to believe Florida Surgeon General Joseph Latipo would not put on a mask to visit State Senator Tina Pulsky's office when asked. Pulsky is a cancer patient. To further his grandstanding behavior, Latipo commented to two aides with him upon leaving Pulsky's office, quote, "Sometimes I try to reason with unreasonable people for fun." Having fun with a cancer patient? Is this the best Surgeon General our governor could come up with? So that's what he said. And then the next day, after coming upon great criticism, he said, well, I tried to reason with. No, he did not. He made fun of her and refused to put on a mask. This is the Surgeon General. He's also an anti-vaxxer. So the reason I bring up that story, as opposed to one of the dozens of others I could right now, is because our guest today is actually a Florida State Senator who is running for governor. So, you know, in the last month and a half or so, I've interviewed both Nikki Fried, the current agriculture commissioner of Florida, and Charlie Crist, former congressman from Florida, from the Tampa Bay area, who is a former governor of Florida, who is now running again. In fact, the last time he ran for governor, he actually did not win, but his running mate was Annette Tadeo. Well, Annette Tadeo is our guest today. She's a state senator. I believe she's in Tallahassee right now because they're doing some business. And she's straddling her role as a state senator, where she has to deal with the confirmation of this idiot surgeon general, with just announcing her run for governor of Florida. So I will ask about this would-be surgeon general and this would-be governor and the insanity that they're foisting upon us. There is another story. I wonder, do I have it up here? I did a second ago. And I guess I closed it. But here's the deal. The story, there were, this is almost laughable. I mean, it's not funny. It's sad. But three University of Florida professors were denied permission to testify as experts in a case challenging Florida's Senate Bill 90 that is restricting voting access here. This is a new law that death sentence put into effect after the election, which in Florida ran about as well as an election can go in Florida. We didn't have long lines. We didn't have the problems that you think of. We do have problems that you, if you were listening last week when Jenny Cohn was on, problems inherent one in Florida and where electronic voting machines are used, those are there. But the problems we've had as Democrats, they don't care about. They discount those issues. But they're fake problems that don't exist. They're allegations of voter fraud, which don't exist. That's, you know, that's what they investigate. And that's when they go ahead and change the rules. So basically what happened is these three professors were denied the ability to testify in their area of expertise in a lawsuit challenging this new election law in Florida. This is an assault on our freedom of speech. Everything is an assault on our freedoms. And yet these idiots who are all in with the Republicans, who's like, I don't like the direction the country is heading in right now, deny the reality of what we're going through. We have been gaslit. This is a gaslit nation. I think that's the name of somebody's podcast. Regardless, it's true. I mean, this is where we are. So, yes?
There's an update on that story.
There, come.
What? There's an update on the story about the professors?
About the professors, yes.
Yeah?
There's an update.
Okay.
They said they could testify.
Yeah.
But they can't do it on and miss work, and they will not be paid for the time that they are missing work.
Oh, my God. So they can't do it during business hours, basically. That's insane. Everything about this state is insane. Everything. But it's not only the state, it's the country. So today the Supreme Court had a hearing. I'm not even going to get into it right now because we don't have the time, but I will ask Annette Tadeo about the Texas law that death sentence says he's going to try to put into effect here. You know, everywhere I turn, there's something that's making me crazy. So I'm going to break the tension for a minute because I honestly don't want to start speaking with Annette Tadeo when I'm all worked up. So I thought what I'd do is share with you an ad I just found that shows it's not only the United States. We're not the only FUBAR nation. Right now, the COP26, the climate change conference is going on. And, Australia is not doing a great job when it comes to mitigating the effects of climate change. So there's a group out of Australia that puts out these honest government ads. And I thought this would be a good time to listen to one of them so we know we're not alone. Okay, you ready? Because I need this. I'm sure you do too. Take it away, Aussies.
Hello, bonjour, futsak, salam, kami, banjingam. I'm from the Australian government with a message for the world as we gather in Glasgow for this crucial climate summit. Fuck you. Over the coming days, our prime marketer will be there trying to shake a lot of hands and saying a lot of blah, 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 like we're reducing emissions and net zero by 2050. But for those of you not fluent in Cantonese, the official language of the Australian government, what he's saying is, fuck you. We'll keep digging, burning and exporting fossil fuels, let you do the hard work and take all the credit. Oh, yeah. Fick dick in skinny. We have lots of experience at this because that's what we do back home. Where we let the states and territories build renewables, subsidize EVs, and retire coal plants, while we obstruct renewables, shit-talk EVs, and subsidize coal plants, and then take credit for reducing emissions. We even take credit when those reductions are due to policies the opposition introduced when it was in office. Policies we scrapped, causing emissions to rise again. Sometimes we even take credit for things nobody does, like carbon credits for not clearing land that wasn't ever going to be cleared anyway.
Right.
If a tree isn't cut down in a forest, does it make a sound? Why, yes.
Cha-ching.
All that cha-ching might sound like we do nothing, but we're actually very busy. Our environment minister just opened 3 coal mines in a single month, whilst appealing a court ruling that she has a duty of care towards children over climate change. And our minister for emission reduction, yes, that's really his title, is supporting massive new gas projects that'll contribute a cubic shit ton of emissions to the world not meeting the Paris target. The equivalent of 46 more coal plants. That's 3 more than the 43 new coal plants China's planning to build. We really are overachievers. Or as you Italians might say, siamo dei gran stronzi. What's that? How can we be expanding fossil fuels now that we've announced net zero by 2050? Oh, sweetheart, we can precisely because of net zero by 2050. Does it come with a policy? Nope. Is it binding?
Nope. Nope.
Does it rely on technologies that work or even fucking exist?
Nope.
But does it distract from what we're doing this decade?
Yeah.
You betcha. And don't think we're the only ones.
No.
Am I right, Norway? Nice huge gas exports you got there. Hey, Canada. America. Loving that Line 3 pipeline you guys just expanded.
Oh,
UK.
God.
Nice new oil rigs you got ready to go there in the North Sea.
Russia, baby.
We see you doing fuck all. And to all the other governments attending, we know you want to punch us in the face for obstructing every COP since Kyoto. But hey, as long as you keep buying our coal and gas exports, we know you secretly love us for it. Most Australians are profoundly ashamed of our climate shitfuckery, so don't blame them. Well, except the dickheads who keep voting for us. For them, we reserve our biggest fuck you of all with our technology, not taxes plan. Which means you pay for bullshit technologies that greenwash fossil fuel companies and they keep paying no taxes. That's the Australian way. We hope you enjoy this summit. And
lovely.
If it fails, don't forget to thank Scotty from Coal Fondling and all of us here at the Australian government. Allez-vous faire foutre? Allo-ai gai. Iestash mai kuyovi.
Okay, I don't know what that said at the end.
Authorized by the Department for blah, blah, blah.
The Department for blah, blah, blah. Again, I don't know what language she was speaking at the end or what she said, but basically I understand because it is the global language of we're all fucked and not in a good way. I don't know where we go from here. It seems like it's a planetary thing. It's not only us. Yeah, it's funny because it's true. And that's the thing. She's done a whole series of these going back probably 5 years. If you go to YouTube and search for Australian government, honest government ads, you'll find a whole series of them. Now, I'm not well read on the intricacies of the government of Australia, but she's got a pretty good handle of it on it. And so I give her a lot of credit, a lot of credit. All right. So I see our guest has arrived. Hold on. I just got to get her into the Zoom and get our shot set up. So let me tell you who is coming on. And just while I get the shot set up, I'll give a little intro. Annette Tadeo. I've met Annette Tadeo. It's got to be 15 years ago already, when I was working at WINZ in Miami. Annette has been walking the walk, talking the talk for as long as I've been dealing with politics here in Florida. She is now a state senator, and I believe up in Tallahassee at the moment. And she is has just thrown her hat in the ring. She is running for governor of the state of Florida. So we've already spoken with Nikki Fried. We've spoken with Charlie Crist. And today I'm thrilled to welcome Annette Tadeo to the show. Hi, Annette. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you. My pleasure. It's great to see you.
It's great to see you, too. It's been a while, but we go way back. We go back to the days when I was at WINZ, and I can picture you at an event. I don't remember what the event was. It must have been like a gubernatorial campaign stop for somebody, probably back in like 2005, maybe, back in that time. Something like that. 2006, 2007. You know what? I'm wrong because I was let go from WINZ in 2008. So it was right around that time, 2008. Yes. All right. So we got the time frame now. So now you're a state senator. You're up in Tallahassee. Things are nuts right now. So we'll get to the governor's race in a moment. But tell us what's going on in Tallahassee right now.
Well, we have a governor that has decided to call a special session. And it's insane. I mean, you know, I find it just amazing that they spent all this time saying that, you know, the Democrats don't vote for Democrats, and especially his community, the Hispanic community, telling Hispanics, oh, my gosh, they're going to bring Venezuela style, you know, kind of government
socialism.
Here.
Be careful. Right.
And here we are. He's the one that's doing it. He's trying to tell private businesses what to do, what not to do. He's trying to impose his way or the highway. He's trying to punish school boards for doing what they were elected to do, which is to protect the kids. And he's trying to defund public schools.
It's crazy. Right now, the last I heard, Leon County, where Tallahassee sits, was fined $3.5 million. It was $5,000 per county employee because there was a vaccine mandate in place. 14 county employees decided they didn't want the mandate, so they left. That left like 700 others. There were, I think, 714 employees, something like that. And so the state fined the county $5,000 per employee who were subject to this mandate. A county the size of Leon County can't afford that kind of money. Is that what this special session is about? Or is it about one of the other crazy things he's done?
No, this special session is supposed to be about specifically, well, we'll see, right? We'll see, but it's supposed to be about punishing businesses, although I think they're walking that back a little bit, because as you know, there's a lot of influence here of the lobby corps and business. And clearly a lot of people are like, what do you mean? But it really does create a problem because we do have a federal mandate on businesses with 100 or more employees. And we do have, so it just creates this whole nightmare scenario. Never mind that we already went through a nightmare scenario with the cruise ships.
Right.
And I stood on the Senate floor saying, what is this? What are we doing? Like, literally, you know, in order for them to start their ships again and accept people to come on their ships, specifically, they were told, here's what you need to do to make sure that you can go on the ships. And so they wanted to do whatever it was that was necessary, whatever the expert said that was necessary for them to get it going again. And please understand, this is not just about the cruise industry. This is about a major industry in Florida where a lot of jobs, a lot of people depend on this industry, and a lot of small businesses that have a lot of work because so many people come to Florida to take these cruise ships. So, I mean, here we were, and I remember standing on the floor of the Senate and saying, what are we doing? This is insane. Why are we telling private businesses what they should and should not do in order for them to keep not just their employees safe, but their customers safe?
Right.
And to give people the ability to feel safe about going on a cruise ship. So now we're talking about, for example, Disney. Disney has a mandate.
Yes. Like,
are we going to now tell Disney not to tell their employees what they can and cannot do? I mean, look, the last time I checked, when you work for somebody, if they tell you, and I know I've been in many of businesses where, you know, in order to walk into this business, you have to wear a hat, a hard hat, or you have to wear this vest.
Sure.
Or you have to, there's all kinds of rules and regulations with regards for safety.
Of course.
So if the business feels that it's in their best interest for their safety of their employees and whoever the customers may be, that they should, you know, get a vaccine, I can't believe the government is going to tell them not to do this. And by the way, that's what Maduro in Venezuela does.
That's right.
He tries to tell private business what to do.
Right. Now, so you know, and I just as an aside, I went to a concert last weekend in Miami Beach at the, I'll call it the Jackie Gleason Theater because that's what it is, at the Jackie Gleason Theater, and you had to show proof of vaccination or a negative test within 72 hours to get in. Now, they didn't mandate you wear a mask, which kind of upset me. I wore mine. But just asking for the vaccine, I guess that's going against DeSantis' rule. So I don't know why they are allowed to do this and others aren't. Schools aren't, for instance. And when you send your kid to school, you have to show proof of vaccinations for the childhood diseases. This is nothing new. It's just insane. But something else that's going on now, and we were just talking about it with my husband, this new thing where the University of Florida has told three professors that they are not allowed to testify in a suit brought against the state over the new changes to our voting laws. That's an area they're experts in. And the governor, now the state is telling them, well, you can testify if you really want to, but you can't do it during working hours and you will not get paid if you go during work. I mean, what is this? Where are we?
Again, it looks like Venezuela and Cuba. And so for all the scaring that they did, saying that if you elect Democrats, all these things are going to happen, they're the ones that are doing it. And I will tell you, I am flabbergasted at this situation with the professors. And I think we are going to see, but I think a lot of things are being done by a lot of these universities. Please understand, we decide their budget. The governor has a lot of say on a lot of these things. He puts the people on the boards of these schools. And so it really is it's a lot of influence. And as we now find out, even the hiring of Ladapo, the new Surgeon General,
who I was just talking about,
was what it came about in a very strange and fast-tracked kind of way. But I want to go back to what you said about the professors, because I want you to know this suit is so important. This is about SB 90. SB 90 is a bill that I saw first in my committee. I am vice chair of ethics and elections in the Senate. And I know it's not normal for a Democrat to have chair, vice chair of things. But, you know, again, this is the respect I have earned from my colleagues, even across the aisle. And I will tell you from the get-go with that bill, I was like, this is a bad bill. Like, what are we trying to fix? DeSantis went around the country saying, oh, you guys need to copy what we do in Florida. Florida's so awesome. Florida did a great job with elections. And look, I didn't like the results.
Right.
But I know that things went well. Like, I'm not going to say they didn't go well. So what are we trying to fix? So wait. In this lawsuit, we find out through discovery that there were text messages going from the lawyer of the Republican Party to the chairman of the Republican Party, who is my colleague in the Senate, Senator Gruders, and to the chairman in the House who was moving this bill. And in those text messages, the lawyer is telling them, no, keep this, take this out. You got to make sure that you make it more difficult to vote by mail because Democrats got too good at it. Remember, they used to win vote by mail.
Right.
Crazy. And they loved vote by mail. But we finally get with it. And we are now, and obviously because of the pandemic as well, we got good as Democrats. Yes. And all of a sudden they want to limit. They want to not allow. They want to put, you know, all kinds of barriers in the way for you to be able to vote by mail. And I just think it's outrageous. We should be encouraging more people to vote by mail. Frankly, yes. I mean, it costs so much less.
I know. Everything about it makes sense. I've been doing it for 10 years. But yeah, but they're making it harder. This is what they're doing.
But Nicole, I just want to make sure that people know that the reason they don't want these experts to go to court and say what they and their expertise think is because this case, now there's all kinds of stuff here showing that this bill was not passed for the good of the voters, was not passed because they needed to fix something. It was passed because they're afraid of that, of us winning if we're allowed to vote.
Of course. Well, that's always it. It's these voter suppression laws are to keep people who are prone to vote Democratic from voting. That's all it's about.
Mostly black and brown. Let's be clear.
Mostly about black and brown minorities. Exactly.
100%.
But you're in the Senate, and I need to ask you because I just told the story about this new so-called Surgeon General and what he did to your colleague Tina Pawlowski. Now, how is she doing? Because we learned that she is fighting cancer. She's going through chemotherapy, and he refused to put a mask on when he went to her office. Do you guys have to confirm him, or he's already in?
No, we have to confirm him. And frankly, it is just appalling what he did. And in all fairness to the president of the Senate, Senator Simpson, he did send a letter saying that this was unacceptable and that in our offices, we can ask people to wear a mask if we feel that that's what they need to do. And each, you know, that we need to respect. Look, you have to, no matter how you feel about people on the opposite side of the aisle, you have to respect the institutions. And we've lost respect for the institutions. Like, we don't even have some decorum about it.
Right.
The whole thing is just outrageous to me. And frankly, I had already said this guy should not be confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
He should
but
not.
That was before he did the Tina Pawlowski thing.
Right.
I just thought from the day he was announced, I put out my comment and I said, I'm sorry, but this is the guy that stood on the stairs, remember, with all of their coats, and he was standing next to the woman with the something about the sperm and
Oh my goodness.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm like, wait, this is crazy stuff. Like, what? Like, at what point are we going to just go, okay, this is insane? And again, you can have differences of opinions about policy, but you also need to understand that our Surgeon General is supposed to be here to protect against pandemics, like situations for the entire public. I mean, it's just amazing to me. It's so sad. I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of doctors, and they're all like flabbergasted at what's going on. To suggest that you can't talk because you had a mask. Yeah, right.
Right. Like, but somebody pointed out, you know, he's a doctor. Surgeons in the operating room, the most important thing they can do is communicate with the people who are assisting them and others in the operating theater. And they do it with a mask on. So his excuse is, I can't communicate with a mask on. Bull. That's nonsense. Yeah. He's
total
just
BS.
Yeah. So this whole thing is so disturbing. Annette Tadeo is our guest, and again, she is running for governor. What made you decide to do this? You came in a little late to the race. Nikki Fried and Charlie Crist had both declared, so they're a bit ahead of you in terms of getting their name recognition and fundraising. What made you ultimately decide to run?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's late. We're still a year away.
Right? They were early, so they were just early.
But I will say that part of it is I really wanted to give time for me to go across the state, to have the conversations, to see if there was an interest for a candidate like me. And frankly, as more time went by, more people were like, please run, please run. We need someone that we can get excited about, is what I heard. We need someone that has we've known as a fighter, and someone who has, you know, strong principles and has not deviated from them no matter what, and is willing to go to the mat and fight for our principles. Because again, I actually get things accomplished here, which means I work across the aisle. Mm-hmm. But there are things and there are principles that you never get away from and that you need to stand up for. We need to be proud of what we stand for. And we know we can win in this state if we are proud with what we stand for. Because I will tell you, one of the things that I think we as Democrats have made a mistake about is that we don't do enough of talking about the things that we care for, right? Mm-hmm. For example, Medicaid expansion is something that I know we can get done. I know we have the votes. If I've learned one thing the time I've been here in Tallahassee is to count votes and to know where the votes are and to know where they're not, and to be able to either kill bills or pass bills. And I know that's one that we can do, especially if you have the veto pen to sort of push a few last mm-hmm. outstanding votes. Mm-hmm. And that is something that, unfortunately, we as Democrats have not done a good enough job of selling to Floridians.
Right.
Because
right.
they go, oh, it's going to cost Florida so much money. Well, that's BS. Because, you know, the number one expense in Florida in the budget is our health care.
Sure.
We spend a ton of money because of politics. And here's something that I want Floridians to know about. And that is that we actually, you and I who have health insurance, all of us who have health insurance, have a hidden tax that we pay in order to cover those 1 million Floridians who do not have health insurance.
Oh, interesting.
How do we pay for that? We pay approximately $2,000 additional in a hidden tax every time we go to the hospital when we have insurance to cover for the uninsured. And by the way, that study of that amount and that hidden tax doesn't come from liberal Annette Tadeo. No, it comes from that super duper liberal group, the Florida Chamber of Commerce. They did the study and they said, this is a hidden tax. This is a stupid business mistake for us not to expand it. We're leaving money on the table and it's crazy. But you know, we try to go with the heart. Oh, we need people to have health insurance. We need to talk about the money and the dollars and cents too. We can do that too. We right. can talk about the heart. We can talk about the
well, right and if we had taken the federal dollars to expand Medicaid, it wouldn't have cost us anything. And actually, the deal is even sweeter now. And these Republican governors just will not take it. So that's
but there's only 12, Nicole. There's only 12 states left that have not expanded Medicaid. We're one of them. And I want you to know, not one Republican state that has expanded Medicaid has now, after all these years, said, oh, you know what? That was a mistake.
Right. Of course not.
That's what I'm saying. But there's so many other things. Minimum wage. Look at how huge minimum wage passed by, right? And so many of us have been fighting. I remember doing the challenge with Dwight Bullard way back when right. and living off the minimum wage for a whole week, taking the bus with my daughter, trying to go places. And then it was Thanksgiving and I was trying to buy the turkey and I was trying to buy everything. And I was like, I can't do this on the minimum wage. Like, I failed at the challenge because I couldn't do it. And even though I went to like the cheap grocery stores, I couldn't do it. There's a video of me doing this. But my point is we should be proud of the fact that we fought for that instead of be like tepid, like, oh, I don't know, because, you know, there's some people that may not like the minimum wage. Now that's BS. People agreed with us.
Right.
But guess what? All those people that voted for minimum wage didn't vote for the Democrats. A bunch of them didn't vote for the Democrats because it passed by a lot more. So
right.
this proves my point. Like, we can win people over, but we got to be proud of what we stand for and we got to fight for the things we're fighting for.
Right. But I also worry. I worry about the Democratic Party. For instance, in the 2020 elections, the Democrats got hurt in Miami-Dade County big time. And in the postmortem, There were a lot of fingers pointing towards Spanish language radio, where, you know, we know about right-wing hate talk radio, and everybody hears it, but Spanish language radio, right, ultra right-wing, dominates the airwaves in Miami. And you were actually born in Colombia. You've got a slight accent still that I hear. But it seems like there's nobody in the Democratic Party monitoring what they're saying there, because I'm guessing, but they were talking about the creeping socialism and, oh my God, you can't let Bernie Sanders get in because they're going to bring the Venezuela kind of socialism here. And that's not what it is at all. They use these scare tactics. Yeah. So the Cuban community in Miami went heavily Republican, which they're not, right? What's going on there?
Oh, listen, I currently represent a Trump district, and I want you to know that I'm actually quite popular in my district. And one of the reasons is because, again, I fight back to these stupid attacks.
Yep.
I don't, you know, it's like if you're in a fighting ring and they start hitting you and they hit your nose enough, you're going to start bleeding.
Right.
And that's exactly what Democrats, I get it that these attacks are ridiculous. But you must fight back.
Yes.
And you must do it the right way as well. You can't just say I'm a capitalist. I mean, come on. Like, explain. Like, here's what I do. First of all, I talk about my personal story, right? I talk about how my dad was a World War II fighter pilot in the U.S. Air Force, fought in World War II and Korea. And that's how he ended up in South America. Met my mom, so I'm really only half Colombian. But my dad was from New Jersey, and my last name, Tadeo, is actually Italian. A lot of people don't know that. It's not Hispanic.
But and you're Jewish, right?
And I'm Jewish too, yes. So a lot of people don't know a lot of things about me, including that my first few years, I grew up in a farm. And it was that same farm where I learned how to milk a cow and how to ride a horse and all the things. It was the same farm where, unfortunately, the FARC terrorist group showed up and took over the farm, kidnapped my father. So that's how I ended up in Alabama, of all places. So I do have a lot of experience with the Bible Belt. And and actually, I do really well when I go to the Pensacola area and all the North Florida area. Because
I don't do well in Pensacola.
You think I have a Spanish accent. Wait till you hear me talking around people who have a Southern accent, because my Southern accent comes out because I really learned English in Alabama.
Funny. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of little things that people are going to find out about me as I get in this race. But how I fight all this and how I fought it, because, you know, they spend $10 million, the most they had ever spent on a state Senate race. And this was my special election, which I subsequently was reelected. But they had the guy, the perfect guy, the perfect candidate, the guy that they were already grooming to be the next Marco Rubio. Mm. And nice guy, really nice guy. But you know what? They attacked me as a communist, a socialist, and a terrorist sympathizer.
Oh,
they didn't just stop there. So all these things, and they even said that I had an office in China with my business, because as you know, I own a translation business.
Right.
And I remember I pushed back and I was like, well, first of all, my dad was kidnapped by the FARC. Let me tell you this. Let me tell you what it feels like to fight real terrorism. I've been there and done that. And to know that most of these groups, you know, these guerrilla groups are funded by the Castro brothers and now by Venezuela. And then, you know, about China, I just remember saying, you know, I knew I was good in business, but I didn't know I was that good that I can open an office in China when I've never even been to China. So I sort of made fun of that one. But you have to fight back. You have to answer back. And I went straight to camera and I spoke from the heart. Like, how dare you? How bad do you want to win this race that you're going that far and you're hitting where it hurts? And I'm telling you, we saw voters come out that we had never seen come out in a special election when Democrats we don't vote except for presidentials. And even then we have a hard time. But you brought up a really important point, and that is that we've lost a lot of the Hispanic vote. We've lost a lot of Miami-Dade. Yeah. And we must, this is another reason why I'm in this race. We must bring back those voters. We must speak to them. And I don't mean just in their language. Yes, I speak perfect Spanish. That was my first language. But I mean also speak their language, our language, proud of who we are, what we stand for, and how we're going to fight for them. And it's not just about an election. It's about fighting for them all the time and really delivering for them, because these Republicans, all they care is about power, and they haven't delivered anything except for the special interest that is truly who they represent, because that's all they care about, retaining power.
Yeah. Yeah, and gaslighting the country. I mean, that's what gets me. We are facing so many problems on so many fronts, from this infrastructure thing that can't pass because of infighting in the Democratic Party, because we've got two U.S. senators who think that they have more, you know, that their opinion counts more than 48 others, which blows my mind.
It blows my mind, and I don't know why we have, you know, why we don't get rid of some of these antiquated rules.
Filibuster. Hello.
I mean, this is so ridiculous. But I will say this. As someone who represents a Trump district, I do sometimes get a little upset at some of my, and I may get in trouble for this, but some of my fellow Democrats who represent super blue seats, right? They get their elections get decided in a primary, and then they sit there and they vote some way that sometimes I go like, really? Like, you know, I mean, I have to go back and explain my vote to some pretty conservative people. And I'm willing to do that because I know that I can explain my vote to anyone. And I'm not afraid. I mean, I really think, I try to listen to all sides and make decisions that are for the good of everyone. And that bothers me a lot sometimes when people don't have the courage, again, even if it costs you something. It just, like, you need to have a backbone when you're in this. You need to not always do whatever the party says, because not always is it good. And so I don't know. I'm very bothered by the stuff that's going on at the national level. Like, get it done already.
Right. So are you more upset with Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema, or are you upset with the media?
No. Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema, like, this is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Like, what are they doing? And frankly, I've never met Joe Manchin, but I did meet Kirsten Sinema, and it's been really disappointed. But I mean, it seems like, again, it can't be all about you.
And that's how they're making it. And they're holding up everything, and they're bringing down the president's poll numbers and the Democrats' chances. We've got big races tomorrow.
They don't care about anybody the country. Else. Tomorrow, yes, exactly. They don't care about anybody but themselves. And that cannot be the case. That is unfortunately what we always do. And I will tell you, I know this governor is going to have a lot of money, and it's going to be difficult because there's a lot of money riding on him being president.
Oh God.
And he's clearly more concerned.
God help us all.
No, but I'm telling you, this is why this is so important. He's more concerned about being voters president. In Iowa than he is about Florida.
I know.
Clearly. Based on everything he's doing.
I agree.
And this is why I say I couldn't stand on the sidelines. We have to do this. And our math doesn't work if we don't bring a coalition of voters, black and brown, a coalition of Democrats, and eventually in the general, MPAs. We have to win MPAs.
Independence, no party affiliation.
And I believe we have an opportunity to win some Republican women, because this crap that they're trying with the whole Texas thing.
Well, the abortion thing. So that one more thing. I mean, we're running out of time. There's so many things I want to ask you, Annette. But today, the Supreme Court heard not necessarily a challenge to the abortion law, but whether or not abortion providers should be able to challenge the law in Texas. But the fact that they even put this in place, and DeSantis is saying, yeah, we'll look at something like that here in Florida too. What?
Well, we have a Texas law already filed in the House, and it's just amazing to me. I mean, this Texas law is awful. What they're doing is crazy. I mean, it is, I call it the rapist bill of rights, because rapists have more rights.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm going to go back to something really interesting. And that is that bill in Texas actually allows neighbors to turn in, their fellow neighbors.
Yep.
You know who through the government, you know who does that? Cuba. Cuba has a system where you, in every street, they have a neighbor that gets paid by the government to turn in and tell them what the neighbors are doing.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, wait, I thought you guys were like saying that we were going to bring.
Because they're gaslighting. Because it's projection. Everything they do, they accuse us of doing. And it's just got to, someone's got to expose them. And Annette Tadeo, hopefully you're that person. Annette Tadeo, thank you for stepping up. We need to get DeSantis out of there. We need Democrats to take back control of the state. We need to get things back so Florida is no longer the joke of the country. So I
thank you. Thank you for having me. And let me just say that I know that, you brought up at the beginning, like, how are you going to catch up with the money and how are you going to catch up with the name recognition? Look, Gillum started at 3%. Uh-huh. I start at 13. So at least I start a little better. But what we know is that when people find out they have an option, they have a real option between the current candidates and someone like me with my story, my values, my background. And frankly, as a mom with a kid in public school, small business owner, I still meet a payroll every 2 weeks. All these things are how we're going to bring the coalition of voters. And with someone like Val Demings at the top of the ticket and then Annette Tadeo at the top of the ticket, we've never tried a black and brown coalition.
No.
Ever.
Two women, too.
I believe that is the way that we're going to bring the voters that we need to bring in order to win in a state like Florida. And yes, Miami-Dade is going to be important, but the rest of the state is also important. But you can't add, you can't get to a win if you don't have 25 to 30 points in Miami-Dade to begin with.
That's right.
And that's really hard to do without winning the Hispanic vote. So I do have a plan to victory in the primary with the support of many people, but it is going to be a grassroots campaign. I know that. And that's why, you know, we're reaching out to everyone to say, please join our campaign. It is grassroots. Let's do it. We can get it done. I'm ready to do it. I'm excited and eager.
Great. The website is AnnetteTadeo.com. You're on Twitter at Annette Tadeo. Very straightforward. I'll put links to everything on the blog where I post the show today at NicoleSandler.com/11-1-21. Annette, it's great to see you. I wish you the best. We'll talk again. I hope we'll stay in touch throughout this whole process because the ultimate goal is getting DeSantis the hell out of there, getting the state back under Democratic control so we can restore sanity.
100%, yes.
All right.
And we're going to get there, I believe.
Please. Something's got to happen because we can't keep going like this. Annette Tadeo, thank you so much. It's great to see you. I really appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye. And there you go. That's it today. Annette Tadeo. Oh, we've got our funny thing going on here. But all right, that's it. We're done. I'll leave you with the news. Tomorrow, it'll either be got a laugh or not. She got her booster today. Depends on if she has any side effects or not. But I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Things can only get better, right? Please.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Lots of behind-the-scenes action over the weekend, apparently. I say this because on Saturday we were told that a vote on both infrastructure bills was going to happen on Tuesday. Well, late Sunday night, House Democratic leadership announced that the vote would be delayed slightly because there were still negotiations going on in the reconciliation deal. Quote, we have made extensive progress on prescription drugs and other key initiatives which were not included in the text posted to rules on Thursday. At this point, we will need additional time to craft language and get final agreement with all parties involved. Therefore, rules will not be meeting tomorrow on the updated Build Back Better Act test. More updates to come. We still intend to vote as early as possible this week. End quote. So, reports are that negotiations are still taking place, not only on prescription drug pricing, but also on Bernie Sanders' Medicare expansion and on immigration. Now, aside from those still unresolved issues, the Congressional Budget Office hasn't even scored the bill yet. Well, of course not. It's still being drafted. So once again, Democrats are setting random deadlines that will be difficult to meet. As far as real deadlines go, the next important date to watch out for is December 3rd. That's when newly extended transportation funding put in place to buy time on the infrastructure bill runs out. That's also when the U.S. is expected to hit the debt ceiling. President Biden finished his work in Italy at the G20 summit, where world leaders agreed that all nations should take meaningful action to prevent global temperatures from rising more than 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. But critics were largely unimpressed. Greenpeace, for instance, said the G20 leaders, quote, failed to meet the moment ahead of this week's COP26 climate conference in Glasgow. The final G20 communique did not include a promise to reach net zero carbon emissions by 2050, as climate activists had hoped. Instead, G20 leaders stressed the importance of reaching that goal around the middle of the century, wording preferred by the oil-rich countries of Saudi Arabia and China, the world's biggest polluter. So President Biden is now in Glasgow with more than 120 other heads of state for the COP26 summit on climate change. But neither China's Xi Jinping or Russia's Vladimir Putin is there. This does, though, kick off 2 weeks of negotiations that will hopefully end with a firm global plan to take on, as UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson said, coal, cars, cash, and trees. You might recall back in August, the latest UN climate report painted a really dire picture and predicted that the world must cut in half its emissions over the next decade in order to begin reversing disastrous climate effects. President Biden has already pledged to reach that goal by 2030, and part of his mission in Glasgow will be convincing other nations that the U.S. is serious about its climate commitment. Here at home, members of the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol insurrection are reexamining a 134-year-old law that they say the former guy and his allies exploited to try to prevent the verification of the 2020 presidential election. It's the Electoral Count Act. It was meant to give Congress a process by which to certify Electoral College votes submitted by the states. But experts say that it needs updating to ensure that a losing party can never subvert the Electoral College results. The committee's new interest in this law undercuts a legal argument made by Trump that the panel has no true legislative purpose for seeking his White House documents. Speaking of elections, Tuesday is Election Day. Yes, it's an off year, but there are a number of important races being decided, beginning with Virginia's gubernatorial race. Many see it as an early referendum on Democratic and Republican influence leading into next year's midterms. Also being decided at the polls Tuesday, New Jersey's governor, plus mayoral races in New York City, Atlanta, Boston, Minneapolis, Seattle, and Buffalo. Please vote, and do so as if your life depended on it, because it actually does. Now, while the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol continues, other investigations are also finding more evidence. The Washington Post, for instance, has a new big investigation published in the Sunday paper, among its findings that the attack was not a spontaneous act. They say that red flags were everywhere, but law enforcement officials failed to respond with any sense of urgency. Local officials, FBI informants, social media companies, former national security officials, researchers, lawmakers, and tipsters all reportedly sounded alarms, but Donald Trump sat back for over 187 minutes while the Capitol was under attack. One excerpt from the report reads, quote, "During the 187 minutes that Trump stood by, harrowing scenes of violence played out in and around the Capitol. 25 minutes into Trump's silence, a news photographer was dragged down a flight of stairs and thrown over a wall. 52 minutes in, a police officer was kicked in the chest and surrounded by a mob. Within the first hour, two rioters died as a result of cardiac events. 64 minutes in, a rioter paraded a Confederate battle flag through the Capitol. 73 minutes in, another police officer was sprayed in the face with chemicals. 78 minutes in, yet another police officer was assaulted with a flagpole. 83 minutes in, rioters broke into and began looting the House Speaker's office. 93 minutes in, another news photographer was surrounded, pushed down, and robbed of a camera. 94 minutes in, a rioter was shot and killed. 102 minutes in, rioters stormed the Senate chamber, stealing papers and posing for photographs around the dais. 116 minutes in, a fourth police officer was crushed in a doorway and beaten with his own baton, all in the first 2 hours. Trials of the insurrectionists are taking place, but without any television cameras or much publicity at all. Programming note, Wednesday on The Nicole Sandler Show, 5 p.m. Eastern, here on the Progressive Voices Network, blogger Marcy Wheeler of EmptyWheel.net will join us to give us an update. She has been on virtually every one of the phone hearings that have taken place. We'll get her reports then. As of early Monday morning, more than 5 million people around the world have died of COVID-19. Just last week, the World Health Organization warned that global COVID-19 cases and deaths are increasing for the first time in 2 months, spurred by big increases in Europe. As cases continue to multiply in some areas, the South Pacific island nation of Tonga has just reported its first case. This discovery has prompted thousands of Tongans to get vaccinated and could result in a national lockdown. Well, the sharply divided Supreme Court is back in session Monday morning considering a Texas law that bans abortions at 6 weeks of pregnancy, just a week after the court declined to put a hold on the law until they hear the case. And this is a strange one. Abortion is not directly on the table. Instead, judges will determine whether the U.S. or abortion providers can sue over the law in federal court. And finally, it's getting to be that time of the year again, all those year-end lists and quasi-awards. This time, the publisher of the Oxford English Dictionary have announced 2021's Word of the Year. The announcement reads, quote, "The word vax, V-A-X, more than any other, has injected itself into the bloodstream of the English language in 2021. The word has been in usage since the 1980s, but exploded in popularity recently, appearing 72 times more often in September 2021 than a year earlier. Every year, Oxford's Word of the Year seeks out the word that best reflects, quote, the ethos, mood, or preoccupations of the preceding year, that also has, quote, potential as a term of lasting cultural significance. Vax was determined to be the clear winner, according to a senior editor at Oxford Languages. We also learned that Merriam-Webster Dictionary added several COVID-related words to their dictionary in October, including long COVID and vaccine passport. Sign of the times. I got the And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and The Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.